Good afternoon, everyone. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here at Global Patriot Radio, where you can find us every day at blogtalkradio.com. That's every day, starting with Mondays. Vito Esposito, the Vito Esposito Show with Big Al, of course. And Tuesdays, Eric is in with the Cross and the Crescent discussion. Both of those at 6 p.m. Eastern. 5:30 Wednesdays, that's me, Hank Jones, with Hank Jones Poly Sports. Thursdays, Paul Sutliff sits in with the Sutliffian Report, also at 6 p.m. Eastern. Then Fridays at noon, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday. And then Saturday nights from 10 p.m. to midnight, the beautiful Christy joins Minister Usama Dakduk, revealing the truth about Islam. Then we finish out the week on Sunday. Eric is back, a real interfaith dialogue, a continuation of the Cross and Crescent discussion. I am hanging out here, Electric Hankland, just fed my little mini Aussie. She's awesome, but she's a miniature Australian Shepherd. And my wife is up in Ohio visiting with her mom, so she's not even over in Acoustic Hankland. It sits dormant right now. Yeah, little twist. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour telephone messaging and call center services. For your medical office, your AC company, your electrician, maybe a government account. They do it all. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days per year. They also work with remote staff. So if you're good at remote work, you don't want to go to an office, or if you're one of those whose office is never reopening, you're just all working remote, give them a call, 800-555-3738. Or look them up on the web at alliancecommunications.com. Now let's get to our obituaries. Last Thursday, we lost jazz multi-instrumentalist Joey DeFrancesco at age 51. Joey DeFrancesco, rather prolific. He released 30 albums under his own name. He also played as a sideman for tons of people, Miles Davis, John McLaughlin. I'd call those jazz stalwarts. He toured with the likes of David Sanborn, the late Larry Coryell, George Benson, Steve Gadd, John Scofield, and Lee Ritenour. He also did session work with Bette Midler. I know. But she is talented. I'll give her that. Janice Siegel from Manhattan Transfer, as well as Diana Krall, otherwise known as Mrs. Elvis Costello, and Van Morrison. No cause was listed. Pretty young, though, 51. We also lost blues singer Mabel John at age 91. Mabel John was the first singer signed to by Berry Gordy to Motown's subsidiary label, Tamiya. She was eventually released from her contract. Then she sort of revived her career with several albums and songs on the Stax label, including the hit Your Good Thing Is About to End. She also appeared as a veteran blues singer in the film Honey Dripper. That was a film had Danny Glover as the owner, proprietor of a blues bar and restaurant. It was kind of struggling, and he was supposed to get this old legendary blues guitarist, and instead he got a young up-and-comer who comes in and lights the place up, saves it. Friday, we lost French-born American chef and author Roland Mesnier, complications of cancer. He was 78. He was the White House executive pastry chef from 1979 to 2004. Saturday, we lost actor Robert Lupone, brother of actress Patti Lupone. He passed from pancreatic cancer at the age of 76. He worked in the Sam Shepard play True West. Good play, kind of weird, but good play. He received a Tony nomination for his work in A Chorus Line. He played the Apostle James in the 1973 film version of Jesus Christ Superstar. And he played as the music manager in the 1991 film The Doors. He appeared on several roles in the Law and Order franchise and 5 episodes of The Sopranos as Dr. Bruce Cusimano. We also lost Nina Pacholke. She was a news anchor at the Wausau, Wisconsin ABC affiliate. She committed suicide at 27. I mention that because there's not much about her, but I spent a lot of time in northern Wisconsin growing up, and so we always went through Wausau. Monday saw the passing of former Panamanian boxer Rigoberto Riasco at age 69. He was the lineal and WBC super bantamweight champion in 1976. Then we also lost country singer Luke Bell at age 32. He had a breakout year in 2014, suffered from bipolar disorder, which career greatly. He went missing late last week and then was later discovered near where he went missing. Yesterday, we lost former Disney Live Entertainment Executive Vice President Ron Logan at age 84. After he retired, he became a professor at UCF's Rosen School of Hospitality Management. My daughter actually went there to the Rosen School. Then the world also lost former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev at age 91 after a long illness. He was probably most famous for the rather large birthmark on his forehead. They also had a sort of a close personal relationship with President Ronald Reagan, and many say that that relationship is what led to the decline and the eventual fall of the Soviet Union. Then we also lost former NFL defensive end and SB Nation blogger Steve White to leukemia, just 48 years old. He played seven seasons between the Bucks and the New York Jets. Apparently, he'd received a bone marrow transplant back in April, but evidently just tough to overcome. Oh, we've got a good laughy before we get started from Babylon Bee. Drug company unveils new drug to fix side effect to other drug that fixed side effect from other drug. God, that's classic. Hey, if you want to interact with us several ways, you can call the show anytime, 319-527-6706, as Sue in New Mexico has done. She's on the line listening in, as is Hawkeye Mike, who's going to be on the show later. You can come into the chat room. You can log into blogtalkradio.com, get yourself an account. It's free. And then you can look for live button and find us under chatting with Global Patriot Radio listed. That's what Indy Hawk KB is doing. Or you can just listen online. You don't have to come into the chat room. You can just listen. That's fair. But again, 319-527-6706 is how you actually get through if you wanted to talk. You hit the 1, I think it says. You can also email me anytime, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, at hpolysports. Or head over to Facebook, where if you're trying to talk to me there, I'm probably playing Candy Crush. I'm on level 4,200 something now. Here's some quickies. Dopey Joe is giving a primetime speech tomorrow night, Thursday night, where he is expected to tell America that democracy is at stake because of the Republican Party. My guess is that Barack Obama is working overtime to get his message across via Dopey Joe. Plastic Pelosi is finally facing a little scrutiny over her role in the security breakdowns of January 6, 2021, that she is culpable for the lack of security at the Capitol, which I'm sure will amount to a huge nothing burger, but whatever. Conservative pundit Ann Coulter said on her latest podcast that Trump is done. President is losing support within the GOP. She may not be wrong in a lot of ways. She's joined by Ben Shapiro, who says Trump is the reason midterm momentum for the GOP is fading. A veteran FBI agent has been forced out, says he retired, over, believe it or not, his role in suppressing the Hunter Biden laptop story. Republican bigwigs are saying that Timothy Tybalt is La Dopey Nostra's sacrificial lamb. A bit of a surprise, Attorney General Merrick Garland has put a ban on all political Department of Justice appointees, preventing them from participating in any and all campaign events, whereas before they were allowed to do so in a personal capacity and with prior department approval. Finally, Joe Rogan, noted podcaster and perceived liberal, is endorsing a GOP red wave in the midterm elections. Yeah, believe it or not. So let's get to some news. Eastern Kentucky University head coach Walt Wells, head coach there, is stable after a cardiac episode. Yeah, apparently, I guess it was at a practice, and or at the team's facility on Sunday morning. He's at the intensive care unit at the University of Kentucky Albert Schiller Hospital in Lexington. The specifics surrounding the cardiac are not yet known, although UNC administrators did spend time with Wells and his wife at the hospital. He's going into his third season. He's 10-10 overall. He went 7-4 last year. It's his third stint. Also been an assistant at Tennessee and Kentucky. They opened this Friday against Eastern Michigan. Not clear yet whether he will be available or when he will be available. So thoughts and prayers with the Wells family. Here's a fantastic piece from Steve Dace, noted personality on the Blaze TV network. Does the Bigger Ten podcast, also does some Michigan podcasting. It's on the Conservative View website. This is an excellent article. It's why I want to read it. It's titled, What Comes After Fauci's Gaslighting Could Be Even Worse. He says, I too am offended that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis called Anthony Fauci an elf who should be tossed across the Potomac, not because he said it, but because he forgot to say the part about the millstone. Fauci deserves a fate far worse than an ordinary turn of phrase. After a fair and transparent criminal trial, he deserves what all the people guilty of manslaughter, at the very least, deserve. For he is the most dishonestly evil public figure in American history. He is America's Mengele. And unless the emotional and psychological hold he still has on too many in this nation is quickly sent to the bottom of the sea, all of us will continue to suffer with whatever lives we have left to live at the whims of the all-powerful biomedical fascist state. This goes well beyond COVID. It has every bit as much to do now with whether or not we prefer being gaslit to knowing the truth as long as it allows our idols to survive, especially the government ones. We have gone from resistance to tyranny is obedience to God to trust unelected government bureaucrats no matter how wrong and dishonest they are in less than 250 years. However, if you think Fauci is guilty of cosmic levels of gaslighting, what may come after him could very well give him a run for his demonic money. Democrats seem poised to finally give Donald Trump all the credit for the poisonous jabs that he has long demanded and craved. A report was released this week by the House Democrats stating that the Trump administration pressured the FDA to authorize unproven treatments for COVID-19 and the first COVID-19 vaccines on an accelerated timeline. I used to think such a pivot to blaming Trump and his Operation Warp Speed for the escalating risk, death, injury profile of these poisonous jabs might be impossible, because the cult of COVID would be too strong ever to be forced to give up its magic potion idol. But then I learned yet another of so many harsh lessons to come my way in the last few years. When the lie is the point, the gaslighting can always get more ridiculous. Russian collusion and Kavanaugh hearings didn't make it less likely COVID would be blown out of proportion, but even more so. Because until there are consequences for such tyrannical deception, the scams against civic sanity and coherence will only grow more frequent and preposterous. So instead of preparing Nuremberg-like trials for the likes of Fauci, the Overton window of the day is actually going to try to frame itself around the tall tale that Pfizer, Moderna, the FDA, the CDC, big tech censorship, and unprecedented government promotion and coercion didn't lead to maybe the worst public health betrayal in American history. Of course, all those entities were bullied into a rush job by Orange Man Bad, and only then abandoned their previous sterling and beyond reproach reputations. Or at least that is the forthcoming retcon, which is already in motion. And why not? They already claimed that Trump was compromised into Russian collusion because of depraved behavior with Russian prostitutes, while the whole time it was actually Hunter Biden filming his own potential blackmail material with those aforementioned Russian prostitutes. getting away with it, you keep doing it. This scenario is dark and terrible, obviously. Nevertheless, I sincerely hope we are forced to watch it play out. For it may take something this brazen and wicked to finally call us out of our comfort and truly understand it and thus start playing for existential stakes here. As opposed to our typical plan of watch Fox News all day and then save America by voting for Republicans who mostly hate us. And if that still doesn't do it, and we retreat back to our comfort as Fauci enjoys his lucrative retirement for putting the millstone around our children instead, at least we'll know once and for all that we're done here. And a lot of you know I had Steve on the show 3 years ago just to really talk college football. And I'd always the impression I'd always gotten from the old Hawkeye Nation website that I used to frequent, impression I always got, and everybody always talk about him, and you know that he was at the time an Iowa State hack, even though he's really a Michigan fan, and that he was this political nutball, so far right that it made Attila the Hun look to be a flaming liberal. Not at all the case, of course. Steve Dace is an extremely intelligent young man. He totally nails it here. He's written a book, Fauci and Bargain, by the way. It's on Amazon, for one. I'd love to get him on to talk about it, by the way. But in any case, give him a watch, give him a listen, give him a read. The guy is really on point. He's pretty much nailed the whole Fauci situation. You know, people are still saying the virus was evolving. Of course, it didn't evolve for President Trump. But wouldn't you think that both Fauci and Birx would have known better, especially Fauci? But no, Fauci was, Steve points out, Fauci's just a manipulator. He's out for Fauci. He's protecting himself. Good stuff. George Foreman has been accused of sexual assault by two teenage girls in the 1970s, which, by the way, categorically denies. Yeah, it was a story that showed up on Yahoo when I was checking my email. It's sad. Basically, he's being sued for allegedly sexually assaulting two underage girls back in the 1970s at the peak of his abilities. That sort of news, as it says, is disturbing on any level. However, when an admired figure is accused of such a horrible crime, it somehow becomes more difficult to fathom because you think George Foreman couldn't have done this. Let's hope he didn't. He has been accused, not convicted. We have to let the wheels of justice turn before we can draw concrete conclusions. Big George said, they are falsely claiming that I sexually abused them over 45 years ago in the 1970s. I adamantly and categorically deny these allegations. The pride I take in my reputation means as much to me as my sports accomplishments, and I will not be intimidated by baseless threats and lies. He says he plans to fight it in court, not settle. And frankly, let's hope that his attorneys can demonstrate that the claims are baseless. The thing is, in the public eye, to many, he's already guilty. Of course, even if he's exonerated or acquitted or whatever, some people are never going to feel the same way about him. You know, I mean, he's older now and he's quite wealthy. But still, no more endorsements, probably no more, you know, appearances on television or whatever. And a lot of people will just say he sucks. Now, look, I'm not saying if this happened that we should ignore it. But I'm kind of wondering why somebody is coming by 45 years later. The term financial gain would seem to apply here. Joe Rogan, very noted podcaster. I think it's the most listened to podcast, by the way, in the world. He did an interview with Meta Mark Zuckerberg. And Zuckerberg let a few things go. He says that Facebook did restrict the Hunter Biden laptop story because of an FBI warning on election misinformation. They restricted the spread because of warning from the FBI. He made these comments last Thursday. Rogan specifically asked him about it. He said, basically, the background here is the FBI, I think, basically came to us, some folks on our team, and we're like, hey, just so you know, like you should be on high alert, we thought that there was a lot of Russian propaganda in the 2016 election. We have it on notice that basically there's about to be some kind of dump that's similar to that. So just be vigilant. Now Zuckerberg went on, he said that Facebook did allow the story to be shared, unlike Twitter, that completely shut down the sharing of the story. He said that for about a week, the distribution of the story was decreased by ranking it lower on the platform's newsfeed. In other words, manipulating the news. He said fewer people saw it than would have otherwise. By what percentage? He says, I don't know off the top of my head, but it's meaningful. That's what Zuckerberg said. And he went on, but we weren't sort of as black and white about it as Twitter. We just kind of thought, hey, look, if the FBI still view is a legitimate institution in this country, it's a very professional law enforcement. They come to us and tell us that we need to be on guard about something, then I want to take that seriously. Dude, it's called collusion. He said he didn't remember if the FBI specifically targeted that story, but said the laptop story fit the pattern of the warning that was given by the FBI. Elsewhere in the interview, he said that his philosophy was that there was no perfect algorithm to weed out bad actors and stories. He explained that the restrictions have trade-offs, whether they are too light, too tight, or too loose. Really? He just all but admitted that Facebook manipulates news in a biased way, politically biased way. I mean, think about this. Think about this now. He didn't come flat out and say we worked with him, but the FBI went to them. Why is the FBI going to Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, especially if it has nothing directly to do with the FBI? And it wasn't misinformation about the FBI. It wasn't a disinformation campaign against the FBI. It wasn't even against a candidate. Or was it? See, that's the thing. They don't want people to know what's in the laptop. We're starting to get more and more. But yeah, you know, people will say, well, it's freedom of speech. No, it's not. Manipulation of facts. I don't know how really that you can look at it any other way. I just don't. You know, it's funny. I get these surveys on my phone or in my email about various things about big tech once in a while, you know, saying, do you think government should break up Twitter or Facebook or whatever? I don't really want them to break up Google or even Twitter. Although YouTube suppression is obviously wrong. They demonetize platforms that tend to be conservative. But I wouldn't mind seeing Facebook get broken up or almost obliterated, whatever. They literally manipulate stuff based on, I mean, now there's a bill before Congress, I believe, that would take away that their ability to base stuff on your preferences, your browsing preferences. And that's fine. I mean, one of the arguments against is that, well, people, they'll suppress like local reviews of restaurants and people won't be able to find, get a grip, people. I get it if you just say good restaurants in Philadelphia or good shoe outlets in Colorado Springs, good hunting stores in Texas. But good Christ, if you know what you're looking for, if you're looking up restaurant reviews, you know what you're looking for. I mean, people aren't that stupid. I mean, yes, they are. Some are. But for the most part, people are not. People know what they're looking for on the Internet. But yeah, again, it's almost confirmed now that he did this, that Facebook did this. Now, a lot of people speculate that this is really about CYA for Zuckerberg. And it's maybe even a way for him to say, FBI, before you try to push me around or prosecute me or anything else, we got this little ditty that you reached out to us. I mean, I can't believe that in the same story, he said, a legitimate institution, and very professional law enforcement. Very professional? Very professional? That description stopped fitting the FBI a while ago. Let's see, NFL rookie, former Alabama running back, was shot multiple times in a robbery attempt of Columbia. He plays for the NFL's Washington Commanders. Who are they? Yeah, the Washington Redskins. Brian Robinson, he was selected by the Commanders in the third round of this year's draft. He was taken to City Hospital with what the team termed non-life-threatening injuries. Said he was shot in the lower extremities, and we're trying to determine if he was the victim of a carjacking attempt. Non-life-threatening injuries currently being treated. Team officials are on site. They said they ask that you respect his privacy at this time. Now, look, I'm not saying that he did anything wrong at all. He probably is the victim here. But when they say that, privacy can be code in the celeb and sports world. Privacy can be code for we're trying to figure out we can cover up something if it's bad. So anyway, Dan Snyder and his wife, co-owners, or I guess it's his daughter. Anyway, the team president, Coach Ron Rivera, team physician, we're all there at the hospital with him. That happened shortly before 6 o'clock the other night. Carver Langston neighborhood, just northeast of Capitol Hill. You know, if he'd been closer to Capitol Hill, of course, he'd had a wall around him. Crack shots that they are have two potential suspects, and they recovered a gun near the scene. Anyway, he's been doing good in training camp. Projected to be their starter. He was there at the team's preseason finale last Saturday, but did not play. Which I get it. You know he's going to make the team, et cetera. So you want to give a chance to the others that are trying to slug it out for a spot on the roster. It's just sad though. You know, I mean, a guy can't even drive around. I don't care if it's DC. I mean, somebody can't drive around. I mean, without risking being carjacked, that sucks. But isn't it amazing? Defund the police. The rioters of January 6th, and here's an NFL running back getting shot in a carjacking right near the Capitol. Major League Baseball is through, actually the Players Association, is looking to, are working with minor leagues to unionize them. They've sent out authorization cards to unionize the minor leagues. So what I'm saying is they represent the game's future, and they deserve wages and working conditions that befit elite athletes who entertain millions of baseball fans nationwide. Okay, slow your roll there a bit, sport. When they're at the major leagues, yes. At the minor league level, no. They are an important part. They're the feeder to the league. I get that. I think, you know what? I think what this is here. Okay, first of all, it's 5,000 minor leaguers. The players they won a $185 million settlement from the league in an unpaid wage class action lawsuit. They have received housing and increased pay, but bargain. They continue to argue for higher salaries, which for a vast majority range from around $5,000 to $14,000 annually. I'm for them getting more, that's for sure, but I don't know about a union. But Judiciary Committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, has suggested it will call a hearing to explore Major League Baseball's antitrust exemption and its treatment of minor leaguers. Of course, Dickie Durbin tweeted out he welcomes this step. I'll tell you what this might be. I mean, they're saying it's going for years, but think about this. Now, baseball is kind of different from college football going to the transition to the NFL in that a baseball player often signs out of high school and can go straight to the minor leagues and can he actually go straight to the major leagues if he's good enough, obviously. But if he goes to college, he basically has two choices. If he leaves after 1 year, he's okay. If he leaves after 2 years, he's not. He has to forfeit his scholarship and repay it. It's a weird dynamic. There's no timetable on when a player can be drafted, for instance. That's why you see guys that are drafted when they're sophomores, but they don't actually – they stay in school. But I think this is a reaction partly to the NIL that you're seeing in college sports. Think about it. A guy that's already finished college, as an example, a guy that's played baseball at, say, USC or LSU, one of the powerhouse college teams, Texas or whatever, you know, he goes through 4 years, maybe even goes to, you know, the College World Series or whatever. He gets out and maybe making 14 or 15 grand because his game doesn't translate to the pros or whatever. Meanwhile, you have guys that are freshmen in college. You had guys that leave high school now to go to college early so they can sign NIL deals. And there are NIL deals that are pretty large. We talked about, you know, Ohio State having a couple big ones, SEC, other schools as well. So when a guy who's playing minor league baseball and he's riding a bus all summer and he sees college athletes getting money to show up at a car dealership, minor leaguer probably doesn't have that much time to do that throughout the summer. So I get it. I think it's partly a reaction to that. And, you know, the movie Bull Durham kind of pointed out how rough the minor league life is. You know, you don't fly from Pittsburgh to Chicago or, you know, Minnesota to L.A. as part of your benefits. You're riding a bus from Florida to the Carolinas to Virginia and back to Georgia and bus that whole time. That would, you know, that would be a rough life. I admit it. So let's hope it works out for him. A George Soros-backed challenge to overturn, put on the ballot the overturning of Arizona's election reform measure was denied by the Arizona Supreme Court. Thank God. The less that guy interferes, the better. So basically, Proposition 210 was a ballot initiative to undo their new election integrity law. It was financed by Soros, and it cannot be on the November ballot due to lack of valid signatures. Imagine that. Imagine that. Invalid signatures on a petition put through by Big Left or by George Soros. Now, the trial court had let it stand, but the Supreme Court said there's no way that the trial court, they couldn't verify the validity rate used by the trial court. And they ordered the trial judge to explain his calculation by midday Friday. He failed to do that, so the Arizona Supreme Court concluded the ballot initiative did not have enough legal signatures to proceed. Somebody said, Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell said, the irony is rich because signature verification is a standard election integrity requirement. To have a ballot measure regarding elections not approved for the ballot because not enough legal voters supported it is precisely the sort of thing that the left aims to disallow. The fact that the ballot measure in question was designed to eradicate such election safeguards highlights the importance of those safeguards. Yeah, no argument there. None whatsoever. Says this victory proves that the American people are more powerful than militant liberal activists like Soros, who is trying to fundamentally transform America. The United States is a center-right nation, and while hundreds of millions of dark money dollars may distort democracy by astroturfing issues and gaslighting voters, the American people have enough sense and principle that such efforts can be defeated. It said had it succeeded, the measure would have repealed Arizona's election integrity laws for the 2024 presidential election. Do you remember when I had Karma Girl on a while back? And she was, you know, she worked the audit for the Maricopa County audit in Arizona. And she talked about just how awful, it was. I mean, inconsistent looking ballots, different card stocks, absentee ballots that hadn't been folded at all. Yeah, I mean, this is not a shock in the least. Two people, U.S. Representative Lauren Boebert of Colorado and Florida congressional candidate Laverne Spicer, made an excellent observation about the Ashley Biden diary, in which she details having showers with Dopey Joe when she was a child. Boebert pointed out that two people have pled guilty to the theft of the diary, and Laverne Spicer noted that since the theft plea all but signifies that the diary is real, which means the material therein all but says we have a pedo as president. In essence, the fact that the matter was pursued by authorities signifies that the diary is legit. If it was not legit, law enforcement, whatever branch, whatever scope, i.e. local, state, or federal, would not have pursued the matter. Of course, the FBI might have, Biden's FBI. In other words, there would be no reason to pursue theft charges for something that isn't real or doesn't exist. If it was a fake, then you're saying, what? It couldn't have been stolen from Ashley Biden. Why would she be holding a fake diary? You can't pursue theft of something that doesn't exist. You can't pursue theft charges for something that doesn't exist. Brilliance. Absolute brilliance. I'm sorry to hear I believe Laverne Spicer lost in the primary last week. She makes a lot of sense. I think she would have been a good congresswoman. Speaking of Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis had to cancel his appearance at a campaign dinner fundraiser for Lee Zeldin. He's a GOP governor candidate in New York. It said it was an unforeseen tragedy. It turns out he was attending the funeral of FDLE, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, Special Agent Jose Perez, who was killed in the line of duty. And he was also part of Governor DeSantis' security detail. He will appear at other campaign events for Zeldin, but couldn't make this one. That's sad. The Department of Justice has admitted that many of the documents seized in the Mar-a-Lago raid contained matters of attorney-client privilege. Yeah, this obviously helps President Trump's cause in the matter. It's expected that this will speed up the issue of the appointment of a special master in the case. Boy, you know, you just got to wonder, at what point are courts and law enforcement personnel, at what point will they say, this has got to stop? They just keep pursuing it. They just don't stop. And like Bernard Carrick said, the next step, if they can't take him down legally, the next step for Big Left, unfortunately, he said, would be assassination. He says, I don't think they wouldn't, because in the past, they have. I don't know where this is going to go. I really don't. You know, as many people point out, why are they publishing pictures of this if it's all classified? Seriously, why, if it's all classified, why are they posting pictures of it on social media and in the press? Does that not make anybody question it? I mean, it should. It certainly should make you question it. I mean, if I were the head of the FBI and putting stuff out there that's supposed to be classified, yeah, I'm going to be could be a little concerned. Be telling my agents, hey, guys, no, we don't do this. It's supposed to be classified. That's why we don't put it on the internet. That's why we don't put it on social media. That's why we don't put it in the, that's why we don't release it to the papers, because it's classified. I really don't, I don't know. Who knows? I mean, they don't stop is the point. They just won't stop. So the Cleveland Browns have officially locked out quarterback Deshaun Watson as he begins his 11-game suspension over numerous sexual assault allegations. This means he has no access to team facilities. He will not be allowed direction or consultation from the Browns regarding staying in football shape or whatever. So there's that, I guess. You know, Vito and Al talked about it on their show a couple weeks ago, and you know, if this is so egregious, why is it, was, I think it was originally a 6-game suspension and then it was extended to 11. But if it's so egregious, why not either A, ban him from the league or at least suspend him for a season? On the other hand, the fact that it hasn't gone to court yet makes you wonder once, you know, the league's own justice. I don't know. It's, we talked about it. I think it's a complicated thing because, you know, he's a star player. He hasn't been found guilty of anything yet. So, yeah, who knows? Before we go to break and then come back with our second half of our college football preview for the Big Ten, I got another good internet laugh from the Babylon Bee. It says this, China is starting to worry has made Americans even dumber than they intended. They come up with some of the good stuff at Babylon Bee, man. I just, when I see those little headlines or whatever, I stop, I look at those things. Those are gold. China is worried that TikTok has made Americans even dumber than they intended. Yeah, it's true. It is true, unfortunately. Or Homer Simpson, it's true. It's true. We're so lame. Okay. So we're going to take a quick break. You know, let's see if I can find another Laffy. I think I got another Laffy here somewhere. Oh, yeah. Man recalls harrowing moment when government agents forced him to sign $100,000 student loan. Oh, again, it's true. It's true. You know, I better not get off on that. I was about to get into the student loan thing. I better not. Other than this, another Laffy. Here's another Laffy. Meet gender studies major Chloe and seven other underprivileged college grads whose loans you're paying off. Yeah, we're gonna get away from the student loan stuff because it's just I laugh that I may not cry. It's really just getting worse in my mind. I'm just getting more infuriated with it. Look, I'll be the first to say I didn't have student loans to go to college. I was lucky. I had parents that thought they should pay for me to go to college. I didn't exactly shine in that endeavor, but all their lives and, you know, they did. They paid. But you've got these people who – I think back to the idea that guaranteed student loans, the old, you know, the old GSL, and the costs of college going up every time those things are reallocated. In other words, when they increase them from 2,000 to 4,000 or 4,000 to 8,000, college costs go up. Free money isn't really free, obviously, but colleges are culpable here too. They really are. So I'll stop now. I cannot go on and on about student loans. Okay, we're going to take a break, then we're going to come back with Indy Hawk and Hawkeye Mike, and we're going to finish our Big Ten preview with the Big Ten West. Be back in a few.
My, what a marvelous time. Wear your pants and leather shoes. You gotta win and never lose. Oh, and why, oh, why? Oh, Jack, I cry. Keep it up and see you today. Why, such a glorious guy? Easy friends or easy foe? Ooh, you never know. Oh, and my, oh, my. Oh, Jack, you'll die.
Sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith. Oh, he caught it! Smith! Touchdown, 85 yards, Iowa! C.J. Beathard!
Okay, that's, of course, the call from Gus Johnson at the Big Ten Championship game in 2015 when C.J. Beathard went 85 yards to Tavon Smith to take the league. It didn't end well, but what the heck. Somebody asked me the other day, somebody sent me a private message on Twitter asking that first song I played. It's called Jack Miraculous by Gino Vannelli. It was off his, I believe, his Powerful People album. Great song. Anyway, so we're here to finish our second half of our college football preview. I've got Hawkeye Mike. You there, buddy?
I'm here, Hank. How's it going?
Good. How you doing?
Oh, doing pretty good, thanks.
Good.
Excited
and I have
about
Indy,
Saturday.
Yeah, I have Indy Hawk as well. You there?
I am here, Hank. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Hawks are undefeated. Let's go.
I know. Take it to exactly. Take that to the bank. So, yeah, I'm just down in Benadryl all day. My allergies are like acting up, and it's like. So, okay, let's get right to the Big Ten West since we did the East last week. The consensus pick seems to be Wisconsin. There are a couple predicting the Hawks with a scattered Nebraska or Minnesota thrown in. We can obviously toss Nebraska. The jury's out on Illinois and Northwestern. Purdue is anyone's guess. So, Mike, for you, first question. As of now, who's your pick for the Big Ten West and why?
Okay, well, I have to go with my heart on this one because I'm an Iowa fan, and like Indy Hawk just said, they're undefeated right now. So I'm going with the Hawks to win the West.
Okay. So why are you? So you said with your heart, but what gives you the confidence to say that?
Well, I think that I guess it's because, and it's maybe it's more than a hope than a belief, that the offense will be a little better. The line play overall will be better. And that will lead to better quarterback play. And if, you know, I just kind of feel like with the defense we have, if we can just get our offense up to even sort of like mediocre range, we can be pretty tough. And so I'm kind of confident that we'll be able to do that. Maybe I'll be wrong. But
okay.
I don't see a dominant team in the Big Ten West, though. So that's that combination. I think Iowa's going to be a little better offensively. And that fact leads me to pick the Hawks.
Okay. You care to review any Scott Frost predictions you might have made last week?
Well, you know, I think, you know, there goes the national title hopes down the drain again, right, as they say.
Yeah. Yeah. So what Big Ten team, West team, scares you the most in terms of the Hawks not winning it? Which team scares you the most?
You know, Wisconsin always scares me, but the team that I think that they got to watch out for, and Iowa has to go up there this year, Minnesota, and then at Purdue is always going to be tough too. I think Purdue and Minnesota are tricky games, and Iowa gets Wisconsin and Kinnick, so I feel better about that game actually. But I think Minnesota and Purdue are going to be the big hurdles.
Okay. Andy, where are you at this point? Your pick and why?
I think Wisconsin is going to be tough. I think the Hawks are up there. And I think the West is really going to be, even more than other years, totally up in the air. I mean, the winner might have three losses, two losses, and the worst team might have three wins. So it's going to be really close.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, you said you want to rethink your Scott Frost predictions. What's your new prediction, Andy?
I'm not rethinking anything. I said last week the guy is, he's not. I don't remember what I said, but it was not kind. But yeah, that game was really really interesting where they started out and they were dominating, and then all of a sudden. Yeah, you know, they're back in. They're losing, but he's had so much taken away from him. It's almost like Joe Biden. You're not calling the plays anymore. You're not running the offense. So he's just kind of standing on the sideline looking for someone to talk to. I think, but
I still don't get. Well, we'll get to that. I mean, it's that's going to happen. So we'll talk about that in a second. Which team worries you the most? I mean, is it Wisconsin? Would you say?
Yeah, for me, yes. Absolutely. I mean, they are loaded with the big guy Braylon, and I talked about Graham Mertz last year. He's a 5-star quarterback. They brought in a new offensive coordinator because I was wrong on that last year because he did not perform last year. But they brought in a new offensive coordinator. But he's got some skills and they got a great back. The Hawks have trouble stopping, but
yeah. By the way, his backup is out for the year, evidently. So if anything happens to Graham Mertz, they're at their third string quarterback. So Andy, what Hawkeye unit? What unit on the Hawkeyes concerns you the most?
Well, I think this is like you go into a season and we're loaded. I mean, we have the top tier talent, the Jack Campbells, the Riley Moss, the All American candidates, and then. But then, to me, it's like, explain to me what happened with the offensive line last year. This is a offensive line factory. We put people in the NFL right and left.
Yeah.
For some reason, we couldn't block last year, and we just lost one of the highest rated centers in college football history in Tyler Linderbaum to the NFL. So they've got a lot of guys back if they can put it together. I like the guy, Logan Jones. Kirk went across and Tyler Linderbaum started as a defensive lineman, and Kirk went across the line and said, I'm taking him to be center. He did the same thing with Logan Jones. So keep an eye on that. I feel like he's probably going to be, they see something in him. He was doing very well. He's a highly regarded recruit, and they turned him into a center. So if he pans out and he's the starter last I saw, and the other guys just, hopefully put that together. But that's the big thing for me is what happened and can they get that back to where we were.
Okay. Mike, anything jump out? I don't know if you've looked at it, but if you did, anything jump out at you with the depth chart for this Saturday?
Well, I think that, the area that a little bit of concern on offense, too, is wide receiver. We're pretty thin there. And so if you look at the, you get beyond Keegan Johnson and Arlen Bruce, and I mean, it's really like, you're talking, there may be some talent there, but they have zero game experience in college.
Yeah.
And I would like to echo a little bit on Andy on the offensive line there. I as I said, it's more maybe of a hope than necessarily an expectation, because you sort of feel like they can't be they have to improve a little bit, even with the loss of Linderbaum. I agree with him on Logan Jones coming over. I think they see something there, so I expect him to perform well. One thing that I did see that was hopeful is their I can't remember the guy that does the line work for Iowa, but name escapes me now. But apparently they're averaging something like about 15 pounds heavier, a lot of these guys, than they were last year. So they're where they were like in the low 290s. Now they're 305, 307.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. I mean, you really need to have your linemen being over 300, I think, in Division One or FBS football.
Yeah. Well, now, addressing those two units, you think about it, the offensive line, David Davidkoff is not going to play this year. They have not said that he's done with football or anything, but he is not going to play this year. And he was very highly regarded as a recruit. And then on the wide receiver, you look at the two line. We've got two walk-ons on the two line at both wide receiver spots. Now, Reganey is injured, and Deontay Vines,
right,
who is showing
like
up,
he's
wide,
not going to play. He's not going to play Saturday. I think I read Reganey's not going to be.
No,
playing
neither Saturday. Of them are going to be available Saturday, from what I understand. That's why they're not listed. Deontay Vines.
Who's the other one?
Deontay Vines.
Oh, yes.
He said he's been done very well in practice and stuff. So, that's kind of – and then plus you got Justin Britt that's already gone for the year. And then what's his name? Jackson Ritter, another wide receiver that's gone for the year. So, it kind of – depth, I guess, would be the biggest concern. Not necessarily any single unit, although I think the offensive line is a concern. We're starting some new guys in the defensive backfield too, but Phil Parker does a pretty darn good job. So.
I did see where you'll probably see, because of the wide receiver lack of depth, even if Reganey comes back, more double tight end sets with both Lachey and Laporta in at the same time. And there's even talk of kind of moving, like in that kind of setting, you'd move Laporta in passing situations out into the slot where he'd almost perform like a semi-wide receiver.
Right. And I think that's –
They've got a third tight end here that they're really high on.
Oh, yeah. Is that the new kid, the Jax Ostrenga? Addison Ostrenga, I believe his name is.
Yeah, so. That's great news too. If they've got someone, if he can come in and contribute, certainly by midseason, that'd be great.
Yep.
So is Brody Breck hurt? Is he out for the year? Is that what I heard?
I did not hear that.
No, I hadn't heard anything about Brecht.
Right, because Reganey, I can't find him because he's on a par with Keegan Johnson and the other guys, 4.5, 40, 4.4, 5, 40, big-time talent. And he played baseball through 100 mile an hour.
Yep.
But he's the number three option at wide receiver, but I can't find anything on him.
Well, I think he has been hurt.
Has he?
Banged up. Just banged up a little bit. I don't think he's like for the year or anything, but I'm looking for now. I'm just trying to find if there's anything.
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing, usually that pops up in the forums and stuff. So, but I'm not seeing anything about him.
Tyron Tracy left, Charlie Jones left. Yeah. It's because we were stacked at wide receiver. And then you're like, okay, we got two. Do we have anybody behind him? But I can't figure out what happened to Brody Breck. I can't. Hopefully he's okay because he's the forgotten one of those three. You got Jones and then, but Breck is like, he's a big time receiver. I mean, he passed up. The guy throws 100 mile per hour. Major League Baseball prospect passes on major leagues to go play football for Iowa. He hasn't really seen the field. So I expect him whenever he's healthy, he's going to be our third option.
Yeah, hopefully he's healthy. Interesting that Tyler Goodson was and Jack Heflin were both cut by the Packers. Anybody see that?
I did not hear that.
I was surprised because I thought that Goodson was performing for the Packers and that was surprising.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Brock Purdy was picked up and will be on the roster for the 49ers.
Yeah. Did you see the other night? He had a beautiful throw into the end zone and just right off the guy's hand. I mean, so it wasn't his fault, obviously. He had a great throw into the end zone and some guy just chunked it off his hands. That's frustrating, is that thing, for a quarterback, I'm sure. But I'm not seeing anything on Brecht. On here, I'm looking and I'm not seeing anything. So hopefully it's nothing long term. Okay, so let's get to the last half of our schedule. It includes one East team plus the other five division rivals. So let's go game by game. We'll start at Ohio State. Mike, who are you picking for that game?
Well, that's probably the one game that I think that Iowa is the clear underdog, that they're probably not going to come out on top in that game. I say that, though. Yeah, I mean, obviously, let's see how the first part of the season goes, but I think it's probably a little too much to expect Iowa to go into Columbus and win. I would point out one thing that's interesting. Iowa's strength and where they have the stack this year is on defense, and Ohio State maybe has the most high-powered offense in the country, so that'll be an interesting matchup right there. And the question mark for Ohio State on the flip side of Iowa is their defense as opposed to Iowa's offense. So that could be an interesting matchup, and we'll learn. So it'll be interesting to see right out of the gate here Saturday with Notre Dame coming in, number two against number five. That we'll see how Ohio State looks. But Iowa, the last time, they haven't played in Columbus since 2013. If you remember that game, Iowa gave Ohio State, who was clearly the heavy favorite, a very good game. Led, I think, at halftime into the third quarter before they Ohio State finally came back and pulled the game out. And then, of course, we all know what happened in 2017. So Iowa does have an interesting recent history with and then also I would point out the 2009 game when we didn't have Stanzi and took him into overtime in Columbus. Yeah. So, recent years, Iowa's matched up pretty well with Ohio State, really. We'll see what we'll see. But
gotta,
I mean, they're clearly the underdog.
So you
got to
pick.
Well, I mean,
one.
I'm going to pick Ohio State. I have to pick Ohio State to win that. Yeah. As big of an Iowa homer as I am, you have to stay grounded in reality. So that's probably a bridge too far for Iowa in Columbus.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you, Andy?
Yeah, I agree with Mike. It's I think this is probably a pretty one-sided, you know, a blowout. Both teams are coming off byes, but. Yeah, I think Ohio State is an interesting team to watch, especially in the national title hunt. They've got Oklahoma State's defensive coordinator. They brought him over. That's going to be really interesting. I mean, I like Ohio State to win it all. They got a lot of talent, but that defense for the talent level they've had over the last 5 years has been horrific for the talent they have over there. So it'll be interesting to see what he puts together. But I think Ohio State's going to be just incredible. So I'll be rooting for the Hawks, but I don't see it.
Okay, so next up, Northwestern. It's in Kinnick. Andy, who do you have for that one?
I'm taking the Hawks in a really close, ugly Big Ten, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. I mean, we have trouble with Fitzgerald, but I think this is one of those 10-7 games or 9-6 games. But I think we pull it out. Kirk just has a knack for that.
Yeah, and Michael, how about you?
Yeah, I'm still not quite sold on Northwestern. I think obviously they're better than they were last year, but they've got to come into Kinnick, and I do think it may well be kind of an ugly game, but I think Iowa will win that game.
Okay, yeah. So going back, I would pick Ohio State, and I would also pick us to beat Northwestern. I just think I saw watching them last Saturday. They got gashed on the run. It was as much stupidity on the part of Scott Frost as it was Northwestern. A Fitz team.
Love that onside kick, huh?
Oh God, unbelievable! So
with an 11-point lead, what are you doing? What are you thinking? And that was Frost's call. Come on.
Yeah, naturally. And now the next game up at Purdue. Mike, who do you have there?
This game always worries me. Iowa, when they go up against Purdue with Brohm, seems to struggle. And I think Iowa's capable of winning the game, but they always seem to be kind of flat, or Purdue seems to kind of have Iowa's number in recently. And they don't match up well. And I don't know what was more disappointing last year, the Iowa offensive performance or it's probably the worst defensive performance. Maybe Purdue deserves credit. They the way they ran their offense that day that particular wide receiver's name eludes me. He's gone
David
now.
Bell.
So
thank God.
Yeah, David Bell. But they're loaded at wide receiver. They've got O'Connell. Is it O'Connell or O'Donnell, the quarterback?
O'Connell. Yeah.
He's back. I that game, and it's in West Lafayette. It's going to be a tough one for the Hawks. So I think it'll be close. But it's going to be a real. If Iowa can win that game, they're on their way to a pretty good season. Let me just say that.
Yeah. So who are you going to pick, though? You got to pick a team.
Oh, I got to pick a team. Well, I'm not going to go against Iowa. I think I'll say Iowa pulls it out, but I'm probably that's probably I feel less secure in my pick for the Hawks to win that game than any game they have this year.
Yeah. I agree. Andy, how about you? You got to pick a team, but who your thoughts on it?
Yeah, if I have to pick a team, I'd go Purdue. But those turncoats Tyron Tracy and Charlie Jones. I mean, they're going to replace David Bell. But yeah, they got a great quarterback. I think we have a chance to win this game. This is one I have as a loss, but one we can really pick up. I mean, a lot of these games are like they're.
Yeah.
3 to 4 to 5 point games. They're not even one score games. So Kirk has a knack for pulling these out. So I think it's Purdue, but we definitely can win this.
Yeah. See, I've got to go with Iowa. I think there's more to the Charlie Jones and Tyrone Tracy, not so much, but I think there's definitely more to the Charlie Jones thing. And I think Kirk is mad. I think he's pissed. I think, you know, Kirk uncharacteristically kind of lit into the whole process at Big Ten Media Days. Now he doesn't throw fly off the handle like Mike Gundy or someone like that, but he pretty much said the game of college football is at a crossroads right now. And this whole thing, I mean, I think he knows there was tampering. I think Purdue, you know, lost that, whatever his name was, their new number one receiver. And he went out academic casualty, and, you know, days later, Charlie Jones is in the portal, and days after that, he's announcing for Purdue. And you can sit there and say, "Oh, it's his friend and all that," but I don't think they reach out otherwise, you know. And I think that's exact. Yeah. I think it was tampering, and I think,
I think there's bad blood between Kirk and Brom too, and I think it's been that way for a little while.
Yeah,
it's worse now even.
Okay, yeah, I agree, but that's why I got to pick us. Okay, next, Wisconsin comes in to Kinnick. Indy, who do you have there?
I'm going to go Hawks. This is going to be another one of those flip a coin, but I think it's going to be a defensive battle. But hopefully we shut them down. But, you know, it's Graham Mertz. How does he look? It's two very similar teams,
yep.
You know. Always you want to establish the line of scrimmage. And so it's going to be one of those knockdown, dragout, awesome Big Ten game.
Yeah.
I'll take Iowa.
Okay, Mike, how about you?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, like Indy Hawk says, that really this is a flip a coin, and I'm going to go with the Hawks, particularly in Kinnick, to win. But I mean, there's a very fine line here for Iowa between 10-2 and 6-6.
It's
a very fine line, really. And this is that kind of game. But I think the Hawks won by a field goal in Iowa City.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree that. I'm not all that sold on Graham Mertz. I know he's got the talent and all that stuff. He was very mediocre most of last year, except against Iowa, where he seemed to play better. The question becomes, can our run D, you know, shut them down? Because if we can shut down the run D, I don't think Mertz is good enough to beat us by himself. So that's just me. But
well, they got a new offensive coordinator there that might make a difference.
Well,
it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Remember from last year's game, if Iowa can avoid handing the ball over to them twice inside our own five, we might have a good chance.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you just can't do that. Talk about shooting yourself in the foot. That game was over when that happened.
Yeah, exactly. So then we go to Minnesota. Mike, you start. Who do you see there?
This one very much like Purdue. I'm going to go with the Hawks, but only because Kirk seems to have a flex number, and there's been a couple really good Minnesota teams. Remember the 2019 team?
Yeah.
And Iowa took it to them, and it really looked like the Hawks had no business at that time being on the field with them. But this is going to be a very tough game, another really coin flip. But I'm going to be optimistic and go with the Hawks. I do think Minnesota could be dangerous. The quarterback they have up there, this guy's been, I forget his name now.
Tanner Morgan.
Been around 3 years. Tanner Morgan. And he was effective in 2019, and he was ineffective in 2020 and 2021. They think he's got a better cast, that Mohamed Ibrahim back. If he stays healthy, Minnesota's going to be a handful, but I'm going to pick the Hawks in another close one.
Yeah, Ibrahim, I believe he's challenging Jess Settle's record for Big Ten longevity, by the way.
Yeah.
More so
than Tanner Morgan?
Oh, yeah.
He's forever, too.
Yeah, but I think, I guess Morgan was technically a sophomore. I think this is Morgan's fifth or sixth year.
Well, remember, everybody got
that
the
COVID
extra
year,
right? The COVID year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Andy, how about you? Who are you seeing in this game?
Well, yeah, I'm gonna pick Minnesota, but you know it's been 8 years. Can you believe it? It's been 8 years since Floyd of Rosedale headed north. But you know the Gophers,
that's right,
more yards gained against the Hawks. You know, and they had a great game. You know, against us. It was the turnovers and miscues. I don't know if we can count on those.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to take Minnesota, but, you know, I'm going to be celebrating Knox all the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, then we'll start with you, Indy, for the Nebraska game.
Oh, this one's easy. Who's the head coach at Nebraska?
Frost.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll go with the Hawks.
Yeah. Mike, how about you?
The real question is, will he still be the head coach when they come into Iowa City on Black Friday? I probably feel the best about is – yeah, exactly. This is the one I feel the best about of the Big Ten games is Nebraska after seeing what happened. You know, Nebraska, like it's been the case the last couple years, they have some talent. But they just, as a team, can't get the job done. And what we saw against Northwestern last week was basically a repeat of, what, 8 games last year where they led going into the fourth quarter or late in the third quarter and lost every single game where they had that lead.
Yep.
And, at the Iowa game being a case in point, Iowa was down 21-6, I think, going into the fourth quarter. 22 unanswered points to win the game, starting with that block punt. If there was ever a team that finds a way to lose, it's Nebraska. And that's exactly what happened last Saturday. I think they have more talent. Like Indy Hawk pointed out, they seemed to dominate the game in the first half. Even as late as the third quarter, they got up 28-17. I just don't know what's going on with this coaching staff there, and Scott Frost. Well, I guess you have to say Scott Frost because it's other than him, everybody's new, and the same thing still happens. And I do think that Iowa wins that game. I think that if, as I said, you know, because remember the question I believe you posed last week was, will Frost make it through the year? Little did we know what was going to happen. And I against Northwestern, but if they drop either to North Dakota this Saturday and then the following week, I think they're playing Georgia Southern. If they were to lose one of those two games, I think Frost would be gone in short order before the end of the year. Otherwise, he probably survives to the end of the year.
Yeah, I've seen some people that have actually said they're predicting Nebraska to beat Oklahoma. What happened at Northwestern was a fluke, or in Dublin was a fluke. So, have you seen some of the? There's some great tweets. One of which was said, Scott Frost's chances of being gone before season's end are Dublin. I just thought that was hilarious.
That is good. I think that if they're, I mean, Nebraska fans are something else, aren't they? I mean, the Northwestern game's a fluke, and wait till Oklahoma comes into Lincoln. I don't see how you could be optimistic about that game for Nebraska. They played them a good game last year. I'll give that to them. Another one of those one touchdown losses. But,
right.
Boy, I think Oklahoma's loaded this year. It's going to be really tough for Nebraska.
Okay. So let's take Ohio State off the table. Which of this second half schedule worries you the most, Mike? Which single game?
Now let me ask you: Was Michigan, was that considered the first half?
So yeah, that was the first half. That was the first. Year. Yeah, that's the first
okay.
half. So which?
Okay, that's to me, the game that worries me the most. And I can think of three that really worry me, but since I have to pick one, I'm going to do the game in at Purdue.
Okay. Okay, Indy, how about you? Which one can really – I mean, not ones that you think we'll lose, but which game really concerns you the most that, you know, you just think is going to be the toughest or whatever?
Yeah, I think I agree with Hawkeye Mike. It's at Purdue, then also the Wisconsin game at home.
Okay. So we all picked last week's winners. Believe it or not, in true Scott Frost fashion, goes up 11. He calls for the onside kick. He blames it on himself. I mean, what in the hell? I mean, I don't even know what he was thinking. And then being up three, not late, but midway through the fourth quarter, and he's throwing. You know, run clock. I mean, I just don't get it. Now, they say he's not calling the plays, but.
Well, he evidently is. He's not calling offense, but he must be calling special teams. Maybe that's what it was. Let's go on try to kick here.
Well, I think the thing that struck me, too, in the second half was the way as that half wore on, Northwestern just started pounding Nebraska with a run, and Nebraska just wasn't able to stop it, and Northwestern controlled the ball. I don't think Nebraska had any offense to speak of in the last quarter and a half of the game, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And Northwestern just held the ball and just ran right at them. Now, maybe Northwestern's like vastly improved or found their game, so to speak, and then they got their running game going really tough. But I don't know. I think Nebraska's and both those defenses gave up 500 yards or so. And I mean, I don't think that either defense is very stellar. So Nebraska's got some problems. They got some issues on defense, I think.
Yeah, Andy, what were your thoughts of the game? Briefly.
Well, I'll tell you what, I watched the start of that game. I'm like, oh my gosh, Nebraska's arrived, big time talent. They were dominating. I think it was 14-3. And I'm like, hey,
yeah.
Yep. Do they have, right. I believe, 21 transfers? Like, you're like, maybe he's put it together. And then, you know, the Scott Frost effect kicks in, I guess. But yeah,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you mentioned.
Warning. Yeah.
Mike, you mentioned Northwestern pounding the ball. That's one area where I think Fitz is really a better coach than a lot of people give him credit for. That, you know, the perception is that Northwestern is always running, you know, five wide and, you know, sort of like Purdue, the basketball on grass of the Tiller area, like all they're doing is throwing. And that's not the case. I mean, he utilizes a very effective run game as well, and he's had some good running backs over the years.
No, he did. They really did. They really just pounded it and handled Nebraska on the line of scrimmage in the second half.
Yeah. And I'm not a Fitz hater like a lot of people, like a lot of Iowa fans. I mean, I happen to think he's a good guy, a good coach.
Oh, no,
passionate.
I don't either.
Yeah. And you know
yeah,
what?
I do too.
There's a lot of play. You can't tell me that guy couldn't get a job damn near anywhere after the career he's had. And he has stayed at his alma mater. I mean, he is committed to that program. I give him all the credit in the world.
He has done a lot with what he's had, and he really has. Yeah. And, you know, you talk about Ferentz, you know, being able to do that at Iowa, but, I mean, I think it's even more so Fitz at Northwestern. And, like, they never have two bad years in a row, so that's why I thought they would be improved this year, and I think they are.
Well, as you pointed out last week, the last two even-numbered years, Northwestern has been the Big Ten West champion, so – that kind of scares you a little bit. So, now, did anybody watch Wyoming and Illinois?
I did.
Did you? And how did? I mean, I was listening on SiriusXM at that point. How did they? I mean, it was a pretty easy win for them, but.
Well,
think
I think
they looked...
that's right, and I know Indy Hawk was pretty, you know, adamant that Illinois is going to win no problem, and which was the case. And I thought I did pick Illinois, but I thought they might have a tough time with Wyoming. Not really. Illinois really I thought looked pretty good, and we don't know how good Wyoming is, but Illinois was clearly better and dominated the game. I thought, especially as the game wore on.
Uh-huh.
So they won five games last year. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Okay, so did you see it at all, Indy, or not?
I didn't see it, but I looked at the box score and everything. But I think it's a good example of, you know, the money. It's hard to have a bad football program when you're raking in the money that the Big Ten is, and I think that was a good. This is, you know, they're the bottom feeder. You know, Illinois is picked last in the West.
Yep.
And you know of the weaker of the divisions, and they beat a pretty good Wyoming team pretty badly. So,
yeah, I think I just listened to it. It sounded like they had no problems whatsoever, and I'm glad to see that Mikey Dudek is finally gone after 27 years or whatever. So I think he did break the Jess Settles record, maybe. But. So let's get to this week's games. Let's get to them. Tomorrow night,
good stuff.
Tomorrow night we got Penn State at Purdue. Mike, who you picking?
This is a hell of a game, and I was listening to a discussion of this on the Big Ten Network the other night, talking about how for both these teams, what a big game it is. You know, Penn State's got aspirations to be getting back, and obviously Purdue is hoping to build on some of the momentum they have, and I think they're optimistic. I am going to go with this game's at Purdue.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Boilermakers to win the game, but I think it's going to be a close, hard-fought game. Hell of a game tomorrow night, and be excited to watch that. But I think Purdue's going to pull it out at the end in a close one.
Okay, Andy, how about you?
I'm going to go. I'm agreeing with Mike. It's I like Purdue. I mean, I like the offense. You know, I think Tyron Tracy and Charlie Jones have a big hand in it. Maybe half game goes to the Hawks. I don't know.
Yeah, you got to remember Tyron Tracy. I mean, I love the kid. He seemed to be a good teammate, a good you know, everything about him. But you know, Purdue's talking about how they're going to run him a lot in the backfield because he was a running back in high school and you know all that stuff. To me, that kind of signifies that, you know, they're not really confident with him as a number one on the receiver line. You know, Charlie Jones is going to be Charlie Jones. I'm just not all that clear that, you know, Penn State's a darn good team. You know, they've been good. What's his name? Clifford is back. I think Penn State can get it done. Now, will they? I don't know. But I'm going to go with Penn State because I just think I think Franklin's hungry, too. I know Brahm is hungry and all that, but I think Franklin's really hungry. I think he is just, you know, he's had a couple years where, you know, he just seems like he's got it, and then all of a sudden, you know, things fall apart. So I don't know. I'm going to go with Penn State.
Well,
so.
if this game was in Happy Valley, I would agree with you, Hank. I'd go with Penn State. But I'm just I think the home team's going to have the advantage here. That's the real reason I picked Purdue. I do think the one question mark for Purdue, they have no Karloftis this year, and that you can't underestimate the influence that guy has.
Yeah, they lost
so
two guys off their defense, two key guys off their defense.
Yeah, so the defense is a slight question mark for them. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Friday is a good game. The first one is not a good game. Western Michigan at Michigan State. Mike, who are you going with? All right, Andy, who are you going with in that one?
I'm going to go Michigan State.
Yeah, Mike.
Oh yeah, Michigan State. Is there something I don't know about Western Michigan that should make me?
No, I just figured we had to at least ask. It's on the calendar.
Yeah, Michigan State surprised team last year, so I think it's Mel Tucker. Is a good. He's getting the job done. Michigan State, I think, is going to win handily.
Yeah. Okay. Friday. This is a really good one, Mike. I think you, Illinois at Indiana. That'll be an interesting game.
Yeah. That another Big Ten matchup. You know, Indiana was very disappointing last year. I don't know if there's much grounds for optimism. So even though this game's in Bloomington, and Indy Hawk may have more profound thoughts on this than I do, I'm going to pick Illinois to go in there and beat them in a close one.
Okay. And Andy, how about you?
Well, I'm gonna go Illinois just because of brother Tommy. I know he was on them all year last year.
That's right.
That's right. I forgot.
So
they had like some big win, and then of course they ended up losing to like, I forgot who, but they, you know, they lost. Maybe it was like UTSA.
UTSA. Yeah.
Who has had a good program the last few years? But you know, by the same token, brother Tommy with his Illinois love. I'm going
to
go. I'm going
to
go
clear,
Indiana.
Be just because I don't want to hear all about Indiana football for a week.
Okay. Well, here I'm going to go with Indiana because I think last year I think they had high expectations. They've lost Michael Penix, who has got the starting job at Washington now. I'm going with Indiana because it's on their, you know, it's a home game for them. It's their first one, so they're quote-unquote fresh. On the other hand, I guess you could see that Illinois might very well have the advantage of already having played a game, so that's just tough to figure. But I'm going to go with Indiana just to be contrary. Saturday, Indy, we'll start with you, Colorado State at Michigan.
Oh, I'm going Michigan. I think Michigan is really good this year.
Okay, Mike, how about you?
Oh, I think Michigan's going to win, hands down. I do look for a little improvement. Colorado State, they got the brand new coach, Jay Norvell.
Yep,
and
exactly.
He did a good job in Nevada, and I think he'll do a good job at Colorado State, but not there yet. So Michigan wins easily, 42
yeah,
to
okay.
14, something like that.
And then you're on first, Mike. South Dakota State at Iowa.
Iowa better not take these guys lightly. I don't think they will. First game of the year, you know, it's always kind of unpredictable, but I think with the defense Iowa has, and I think they'll just kind of line up and try to go at South Dakota State, they'll wear them down, and I think the Hawks will win it something like 28-14, something like that.
Okay. Andy, how about you?
I'm hoping for the Hawks on a late field goal.
If it comes to that, I mean, I got the Hawks. I you know, it's hard to say whether
Kai,
we're going to be
not.
This.
I don't need that. I don't need that kind of pressure in the game of the year or that kind of stuff.
I don't either.
Boy.
Why did we schedule them?
I'm too old.
Why schedule them?
They are now the number two team in FCS, if I saw correctly.
Big mistake. Yes, they
I
are. They're
right,
number
yeah.
two. Yeah.
I think it's an easy game. I think it comes down to two block field goals myself.
Let's hope not. But they better be ready for them, though. I mean, you can't take these guys lightly, or they're gonna be in trouble. I will say that.
Yeah.
And plus, we start terrible every year.
Yeah, but we usually have a pretty good game against the non-conferences. So, okay, now Buffalo at Maryland, Indy. Where are you on this one?
I'm going Maryland.
Okay. Yeah, it's at Maryland. Mike, how about you?
Yeah, Maryland. What I hear, they're expecting some good things out of Maryland. I'm glad we're not playing them this year. And Maryland wins.
You know, I still
I just want to figure out how to pronounce the quarterback's first name and last name. It's the worst name in sports history to try to pronounce.
Yeah, Tagovailoa is how you say the last name. I don't have any idea how you say the first, but
now try the first one.
Yeah. Now, this is a good one. Rutgers at Boston College. Mike, who are you going with?
Oh, man. I know nothing about Boston College this year, ACC, right? Rutgers under Schiano showed some improvement last year, but they were pretty much flat on their back the second half of the year. So I don't know. It's a real coin flip for me. I'll be a Big Ten homer, and now I'll say Rutgers pulls it out and beats Boston College in a close game. But I have no confidence on that pick.
Andy, how about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of like Mike. I'm not strong either way, but I'm going to go Rutgers. Continue the improvement.
I decided to just pull up ESPN.com to see if there's a line on it, and I'm not seeing anything. I mean, I'm sure there's a line, but is ESPN one of those ones that doesn't print betting odds anymore?
I did the same thing, and I couldn't see anything.
You might be right on that, Hank. I don't know. Or it's a scratch game.
Yeah, probably.
Well, there was no lines on any games on ESPN.
Yeah, so I'm thinking they don't do it. So I'm going to go Rutgers as well. I don't know how good Boston College is or isn't, but I think, you know, you got to be the Big Ten home. You know, that's what it comes down to. Okay, North Dakota at Nebraska. Indy.
You have to start with me. I was going to copy Mike's pick. I'm gonna go Scott Frost as much as I hate to.
Okay, and Mike?
Yeah, I think if this is North Dakota State, as someone said the other day, it might be different. I think North Dakota is not gonna. So it'll be Nebraska's first win in what, 8 or 9 games, something like that.
Yeah, they're hungry for it.
So yeah, Nebraska pulls this one out. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the Scott Frost revenge tour starts now. I really think I can tell you one thing we're not going to see in this game. an onside
or they
kick.
Or they struggle after such a tough loss. We don't know what will happen, but I think that Nebraska won.
Yeah. And then I'll take Nebraska because, like I said, we will not see an onside kick in this game. So at least that's from Nebraska. Illinois State of Wisconsin.
Yeah, from Nebraska.
Mike, Illinois State of Wisconsin for you.
Oh, you got to go Wisconsin. I don't think Illinois State's going to give them much trouble. So I'll say Wisconsin.
Yeah.
35-7.
I'll go Wisconsin, but I know Illinois State is a pretty solid program.
Yeah,
or
but it's FCS. It's FCS, though. I mean, it's just, you know.
Oh, I know.
Not a,
yep.
Yeah. Okay,
yep,
here's the game. Here's the Big Ten, what I would say the second big. I think Illinois-Indiana is going to be a really good game, as is Penn State-Purdue. But here's obviously the game, Notre Dame at Ohio State. Indy, your thought?
I'm backing up the truck on Ohio State on this. I really think the D coordinator coming over from Oklahoma State to Ohio State with all that talent. Ohio State has a top-tier offense in the country.
Yeah.
Everybody agrees with that. But the defense has been the issue. So now you take the Oklahoma State defensive coordinator comes over. I'm going, I think Ohio State covers this. I think the spread is 17.5. That's one of my
17.5?
Losses.
Is it
17.5? Really?
And Notre Dame's ranked fifth in the nation, too.
Yep. I think it's a statement game. But I would not touch it if I was going Notre Dame. But I like Ohio State to cover.
Okay.
Not just a win, but the cover.
And Mike, how about you?
Yeah, I actually agree. I think as much hype as this game's got, it'll be obviously you want to see how this actually happens. But I think the Notre Dame quarterback's going to be Jack Cohn, the old Wisconsin quarterback.
The old Wisconsin guy, yeah.
That guy they had last year, Notre Dame. He's gone, but
he played some at Notre Dame last year, but I think he got hurt part of the year, so.
Well, I think.
Well,
you know,
I think
Cohn's
Ohio State wins this.
Got cut.
Yeah.
Cohn what?
Oh.
I think Jack Cohn. Just cut from the Colts. I might be wrong, but I swear
Colts. I thought he was back for Notre Dame. Okay.
Let's go look.
Well,
let's quickly look.
It's not going to change my pick, though. Ohio State is going to win convincingly, I think, and I agree with Indy Hawk on that. I think they cover it. I think it's going to be something like, 42-21 or something like that, 49-21, something like that. I think it's not going to be close. I think Ohio State's going to dominate.
Yeah, I forgot. What was Notre Dame? Notre Dame was in the playoff, 2 years ago?
Yes, I think that's right.
Yeah. So who is their quarterback? I don't even see. I see the ones listed. Steve Angeli, Tyler Buchner, and Ron Polis III. Ron Polis III?
And a new coach this year, too. So that's another thing. I just think they're not going to be a match for Ohio State.
So is Ron Polis that we know the first? How old are we?
I think this must be Ron Polis Jr., the kid of Ron Polis Jr. That's all I can figure.
Let's hope.
Because remember Ron Polis, what was it, Beto Cook that said he was going to win 4 Heisman trophies at Notre Dame?
I do. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that didn't quite pan out, did it?
I looked it up. Jack Cohn was waived by the Colts, so he's not going to be the QB.
Okay. He's not anywhere near Notre Dame, so that's I got that in my head. But I think, Notre Dame's always overrated at the beginning of the year. They always have them too much hype on. It's just like a automatic thing to put them in the top 10 no matter what. I'm not quite sure what the optimism is this year with Kelly gone, but
they lost to Cincinnati last year in the regular season. Other than that, they had a darn good season. They escaped Florida State, but other than that, they pretty much rolled. I mean, they didn't have really
Did they play Clemson last year?
They did not. They played an ACC-type schedule, but they did not play. And then they lost to Oklahoma State in their bowl game. And I think at that point – and Jack Cohn, by the way, threw for 509 yards that game. But I think at that point, Brian Kelly was already gone.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Brian, by the way, have you noticed he's got a really nice Cajun accent these days? Did you guys see any of that stuff? He's done these things.
Well, you know, you go down there and you start eating that jambalaya, and it just comes naturally.
Yeah,
I just
you got into recruiting mode real quick.
That's
yeah,
right.
I guess. Anyway, okay. So here's a bit of a swerve. Has anybody watched the Niall Kinnick documentary yet?
I haven't seen it yet. No, I need to watch that.
It's on a channel called. It's on a streaming app called Vimeo. It's like $20. I'm gonna watch it tonight. It's $20, and you know it's like an hour and a half or so. And I just I'm looking forward to seeing it. I wanted to watch it earlier, but I just didn't get the time to do it. So I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I think most of what's being talked about in the trailers and stuff is how you know look. The guy was a legend as a player, but as a man, he was even more so. And you know, you look at his diaries and stuff, his writings, and that he would have been a real, you know, a major political force and a real statesman. And, you know, I mean, I think, you know, we think back, I mean, it's been what, 80 some years since, you know, since the 1939 season, but I think, it should be good. It should be, you know, I've got those two books, the 75 years and 25 years with the Fighting Hawkeyes. And, you know, they talk about him, but they don't talk about him as much as you would think. But, I mean, you go on YouTube, you can find all kinds of film stuff on him, and it's just, it should be good. It should be good. I mean, it's, the other thing is, I see these things like on Big Ten Network has all these features on people that never played in the Big Ten from like Penn State or Nebraska or whatever. Big Ten has never done a full length feature on Chris Street. You know, figure that one out. So
yeah. Or how about Ronnie Lester?
Yeah, but he's. I mean, you know,
I haven't seen anything on him.
Yeah, he had a hard luck career ending, so to speak. But he did his last 9 years in the NBA, believe it or not. You know, he wasn't much of a, you know, he's pretty much off the bench, but, he didn't have this tragic end
And also what happened to him is kind of a compelling story. So, you know, you think it'd be something there, but.
Yeah, but no, they got to do stories on Nebraska guys and Penn State guys that never played in the league. So whatever. So that's Big Ten Network, but that's why I'm kind of glad that this is not on Big Ten Network. I hope they never get a chance to air it. I mean, I'm a Big Ten Network fan, but the fact they've never done a full feature on Chris Street sours me on their documentary stuff. So,
yeah,
that's just me, though. You know, what the hell? I'm just bitter. You know, why not? So anyway,
they just had their 15th anniversary. Did you see that the other day? It was their 15th anniversary? They had a little deal on that.
15th anniversary
show with a. Yeah, Big Ten Network debuting. They showed the first show with Revson and DiNardo and Howard, what's his name here?
Howard Griffith.
Griffith. Showing they looked almost exactly the same as they do now.
Yeah. Anybody would remember what the first game shown on Big Ten Network was?
I do not.
I do
Andy?
Not.
Appalachian State upset of Michigan. Pretty cool, really. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
what a hell of a debut. Yeah.
I know, exactly.
Great showcase for the conference.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was kind of a bomb, no doubt, you know. But anyway, so hey, well, we've pretty much come up to the end of it, so you know, I don't want to keep you guys longer. Got football to start watching the next couple of days, obviously. Go Hawks. You guys, who's watching at home? Who's going to a sports bar? Mike, how are you watching? You going at home? Sports bar, you watching at home?
Probably just going to watch it at home. I know you guys aren't big on that, but they are trying the second stab at that Artemis 1 launch around noon, my time.
Saturday?
Friday. It's going to be Nope, they moved it to Saturday. So I'd like to see that first blast off of a Saturn V type rocket and
that's
going to
be awesome. That's going to be fantastic. So, Andy, how about you?
Yeah, I'm going to be out and about. I'm going to be checking with you guys on how the game's going. Unfortunately, I usually block it out, have the sunroom windows up, get the big screen going. And
yeah.
Big thing, but
it's an early game, right? It's like I think it's on 10 o'clock
Eastern.
My time, noon
yeah.
Eastern. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So okay, well, then let's get to it and go Hawks, and we'll talk to you guys later on.
All right.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk to y'all later. So that's it. That's Indy Hawk and Mike and Hank's picks for the Big Ten this year. You got it reviewed. It's been fun. You know, we'll see how it goes. In the meantime, folks, stay vigilant. Do not let what's happening in Washington dissuade you or discourage you. Do not let it get you down. Fight back. That's what we are supposed to do. That's why God put us here, was to not put up with this kind of stuff. I want to thank Indy Hawk and Mike both for being on. I want to thank Sue for listening and for Big Sister for listening on the phones. And those two other numbers that pop up, I think it's the CIA or the NSA watching me. In the meantime, folks, have a great weekend. Have a good week. I'll send you out with a little Hawkeye enthusiasm. Why not? Because I can. That's why. So here we go.
Play fake. Bethel sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith. Oh, he caught it! Smith! Touchdown, 85 yards, Iowa! C.J. Bethel!
That's it for this week. Have a good night, folks. We'll see you next week.